Radio Real. Real radio, your reality.
Welcome to Off the Shelf,
the Second Life radio show and podcast about books and the people who love them.
I'm Kegia Girardi.
And this is Simeon Beresford.
Join us as we survey the literary scene in our virtual world. Hello and welcome to Off the Shelf. Today our guest is Ray Laurie, author and artist. Ray has been active in Second Life for quite some time and we finally asked her to be on the show. She always seems to be so busy. Welcome, Ray.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Speaking of busy, I know you've been busy writing and have a new book out. What is Within the Shadow of Mortals about?
Well, Within the Shadows of Mortals is the second in my Ash and Twilight series, and it basically picks up right where A Kiss of Ash and Twilight, which is book one, left off. And in it, the houses of Nightwalkers, which are basically vampires, Lycans, and Shifter Elves move west after their cover is blown in the southwest, and their goal is basically to start over. The problem is someone knows about who they are, and they intercept that plan. And after a family in the House of Lycan dies, the action starts off a chain of events that basically precipitate a war between mortals and immortals. So we get to see the main couple, Jace and Arya, as they navigate their relationship in the Aziza Fae realm, and also in the mortal realm as the war begins. So there's a lot of little side things going on, like political intrigue, moral dilemmas, and plenty of action that I really hope readers will enjoy.
So what about the Chimerian people? Are you going to be continuing that series?
I will be, yes, definitely. I had originally planned to make it 6 books, actually. And I was thinking about making it into like a sort of episodic type of series. But after I finished Within the Shadows of Mortals, which is the main one, I sort of had the ending already. So I was kind of like, okay, I think I'm just going to do the arc right here. And if I have any other ideas, then I'll probably spin off of that, sort of like I'm doing with The Kiss of Ash and Twilight. But at the moment, I think it's easier to digest just the 2 different stories and rewrite them so that they segue easily from one to the other.
When you write, do you create, a nice story arc for all of the books in the series at the starting point, or does it happen book by book?
I think it happens book by book, because normally I just think of a story and I'm just like, okay, here's the beginning, middle, and fine. But then I start writing and the characters start doing, strange stuff that just continues the story. And I'm like, okay, I think this story wants to be a series or something. But I don't like series that go on and on and on, because then I get bored and then the characters get bored. So usually it turns into a trilogy, if anything, or a duology.
Right. I love... I'll let Simeon talk.
There's a major rewrite coming to this new and pretty book. Because I know you were going to re-release the new book, or you were talking about that. So will the new version be different from the old?
I was planning on rewriting it, but especially since things have sort of changed since 2007 when I originally released it. And there's all this, stuff going on in the corporations and the government and all this politics. But I think it's still really relevant. So I think it'll be probably light rewrites just so readers can understand the story and how it fits in to both that's what happens to me. I get both series mixed up. But with Cimmerian City and A Feast of Shadows. So it'll probably be light rewrites just for that, to make sure it meshes well together.
Okay. Well, I'm a big fan of paranormals and urban fantasy, so I love the fact that you're writing in those genres. What appeals to you about them?
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. I'm a big fan too. So I think for me, I love the world building and the fantastic aspects of the genre. I grew up loving sci-fi and fantasy, so I'm a huge fan of world building and all that good stuff. So I was really excited to see the recent surge in fantasy and paranormal because it allowed for that type of world building that I loved growing up, and also some aspects of noir that I love so much, and contemporary that really took the genres in a different direction. So it's fun to experiment with them and cross genres up a little to see what kind of stories come out. I think that's my favorite aspect of it.
Well, you've mentioned being influenced by Anne Rice, but your stories take a very different tone, in my opinion. They're not nearly as dark, but they have some really nicely complex characters.
Oh, thanks.
Which isn't so much a question. It's just, I guess, how are you reinterpreting it to make yourself happy as a writer?
Well, I think what I loved about Anne Rice's take on it is that she had this community and this whole history of vampires. That's true. It wasn't as dark, you know, my series, but I love the little paranormal romance aspects along with the contemporary fantasy. So I kind of mixed the two up. So it's a little light as far as in A Kiss of Ash and Twilight, but in Within the Shadows of Mortals, it gets a little darker, especially towards the end. So it's kind of a mixture, and I'm not even sure how Inheritance of Ashes, the third book, will turn out. Maybe even darker than that, but we'll see.
Well, a strong theme in your book seems to be that clash of cultures. You see that in the romances you write, and the paranormals, and even your science fiction. We see the two cultures meeting, clashing, and hopefully, possibly coming together. Would you say that's a major theme in your fiction, or am I just imagining it?
Oh, no, you're totally on point with that. I love the idea of people from different backgrounds coming together, even though society or outside forces say, you know, hey, you guys shouldn't mix, you guys shouldn't be together, it's just not right. And through their actions and respect and love for each other, they basically say, you know, stuff it and just go on about their business. So I enjoy seeing people fighting through adversity to be together despite all odds. And I grew up around a lot of different cultures, and I enjoyed seeing it reflected in my entertainment as much as real life. So I love to write about that. Yeah.
Great. You've mentioned the world building, and mythology is a part of many of your stories. If people visit your websites, they'll see that you've got that laid out to a certain extent on the website. Are you basing it on existing myths, or are you creating all of your own alternate worlds?
I'd say it's a mixture of both. In my sci-fi, I mainly create my own future worlds based on what I see going on in today's world. But in my fantasy and paranormals, a lot of it is based on existing mythology, kind of like with my novella Uthiel's Embrace. I wrote about the Undyne mythos, and with Ash and Twilight series, it was the vampires and weirs and fae. And what I try to do is take existing mythology that hardly anyone has ever heard of or written about yet, and usually it's within different cultures, like the vampires of another culture other than the European kind of Romanian vampires. And that's why I was so inspired to write about the Aziza fae. And I love the idea of having light fairies mixed with the dark mythos like vampires, and I thought it'd be fun to toss them together and see what I come up with. And that's how I come up with the A Kiss of Ash and Twilight paranormal romance. And especially since the Azizas basically assist hunters and vampires are natural born hunters, so I said, this should be an interesting story. And after that, the series was born.
Yes, I want to ask you about Aziza. Could you tell me some more about them? All I know about Aziza is that they've got something to do with Benin. Isn't a lot.
So can you tell us more about the Aziza and where that particular mythology came from?
Sure. Not much is actually written about them, sadly enough, but they did indeed derive from West Africa. Now Benin, formerly Dahomey, and they're basically a benevolent race that lives in the forest, and they're known to give practical and spiritual knowledge to people and magic to hunters. And since I knew they came from Dahomey, I researched the Fon people who live in that region. And I also studied a bit of their language and culture to get an idea for how the Aziza would exist. So I took a bit of poetic license to expand on the myth because there wasn't very much info on them, but I tried to stay true to their region and culture as best as I can.
How did you even discover them? It's a new race for me, if you will.
Yeah, I didn't even know about them either, but I tend to do, this is like a weird thing with me, I tend to do random Google searches on things. So I was kind of like, I wonder if there's any like Aziza Fae mythology in Africa. So I went, I went Africa fairy mythology, and the Aziza came up. I'm like, oh, I never even heard of that. So I researched that, and it was just like about 3 lines, I think, at most, whenever I found out about them. So I basically just researched more about the people in the region to find out how they came about. So that's kind of where that came from.
Great. And your background, I'm going to change the topic just a bit, is in media arts and animation. So your research side of it is a bit, you know, I'm like, oh, I expect that of, you know, a history major or something like that. But rather than somebody who's more focused on the visual arts, how do you feel that comes into your writing and how does that contribute to it?
Well, growing up, I was always obsessed with film. So I love the visual medium. And in fact, filmmaking was one of my dreams, and it still kind of is. I would love to do films one day. But I see my stories as movies in my head, and coupled with the fact that I love to draw, I went into media arts and animation to study it. So it helped me a lot with creating book covers, and it helped me see visually how stories work when they connect to readers on that level. So I think mixed in with that visual idea of storytelling, with the narrative, I kind of just am able to see the story and record it. Sort of like a recorder standing off to the side while the characters act. So in a way, that's kind of what writing is for me and how they mesh together.
Okay, so are you writing scripts as well?
At the moment, no. I'd love to get back to that, though, because I have a ton of ideas for movies. But my problem with scripts, whenever I heard from script coverage readers, was always that you have to cut it down. There's too much background. There's too much narrative. And I'm like, okay, I probably need to make this into a story first or something. So I'll probably work backwards from that.
Do you do any podcasting of your books? Because I keep thinking that with that theatrical side of it, bringing it, those sounds and sound effects into it might be kind of fun.
That would be. I would totally love to do that. There's a company called Graphic Audio, I think. And I listen to their Rogue Angel series, and they have all these special effects and music and stuff. And I thought that would have been so cool to do. So yeah, I've thought about it, but I haven't really taken the steps to find out how to do it. Exactly, though. But it's been in the back of my mind.
Our musical break's coming up. Play it, Gabby.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that group has one of the best names in the industry. They're called the Deadly Nightshade Botanical Society. And that was Clockwork Dream off their Clockwork Dreams album.
Yeah. I think it's a brilliant name as well. Anyway, Ray, some of your stories are available as ebooks, some paper, some both. Why the mix of formats?
Well, I broke into writing digitally with e-zines and the like back in, you know, the 90s about. And this was way back before the internet e-books took off, I think, as well. But I love the idea of seeing my work in that venue. And eventually, after running my own publishing company with a partner of mine, I managed to place some of my works with other e-publishing companies. And I really learned how the business works throughout the whole process. And I also got to hang out on some reader boards to share my love of books and also to see what readers are enjoying at the moment. So over the course of the digital revolution, I noticed there were camps that like ebooks and other camps that like print books. And I wanted my stories to reach as many readers as possible. So I decided to release my work in ebook and print where I had the available rights to do so, but work with the companies that were bringing in the ebook revolution. So some of my work is with e-publishers who are strictly e, unfortunately, but I try to get them into print wherever possible for the reader's convenience so I can reach both sections there.
So could you, who are your publishers?
I am currently working with Freys Bauer. I used to work with the Wild Rose Press and Eternal Press. I've also mainly done a lot by myself, and I'm in talks to work with some others, but I can't really say at the moment. And I think that's all. Wild Child also, which is an offshoot of Freys Bauer, but I believe that is it. I used to work with Airlander also. That's a new one that recently came out, but yeah, I hope I'm not leaving anyone out.
One of the things I admire about your books is the covers. Do you do your own designs? Where do they come from?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, actually I do. And I mostly create most of my covers myself, but a few kind of like the anthologies and some of the shorter works, like the new One Evening in London cover was done at the publishing house, Freys Bauer. But I've been pretty fortunate to work with some houses that allow me to create my own covers, because I usually get a good idea for how to convey the book in one picture, the theme and the characters and setting and all that. And I think that's the aim of a good cover, at least when I look at it as a reader. I kind of like the composition, and are the characters close to what I imagine or what is described as the characters in the book, and if they're eye-catching and will make readers stop and take a closer look. So I'm very grateful for my graphic design classes, because they helped me tons in that area.
Yeah, it's one of the advantages of small press generally, isn't it? They actually allow you to have some input into what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
You conduct a regular writing class in Second Life. It's called Plotters, Pantsers, and Proofers. But what are pantsers?
That is a good question. Pantsers are basically writers who write by the seat of their pants. And in other words, they may not use a detailed outline, kind of like plotters do, that basically lays out the whole story from start to finish. But they may have an idea for the plot, obstacles, characters, you know, the climax, resolution, all that good stuff, to see where the story is going and why it's happening. I'm a pantser, but I have light aspects of a plotter, but I mainly just dive into a story and let the characters take me where they may. But it's all based on a preconceived idea of who these characters are, why they're in the story in the first place, and what the main problem is that needs to be solved by the end. It's very organic writing, and it can be pretty exciting, I think. It definitely makes rewriting fun.
Where can people take your classes in Second Life?
I'm usually at the Written Words LSJ campfire. I have an LM for anyone who's interested, but usually you can catch me there. We're taking a bit of a hiatus at the moment, although after here we may do a little spontaneous class just for fun. But you can usually catch me there at Written Word, and we usually meet on the weekend because that's best for everybody, usually in the evening for the US class and around this time for the UK, so I can get the good time for everybody. But we should be coming back September or October, one of those two, to get ready for NaNoWriMo in SL. We usually have some build up to that and cheer everybody on, so it's going to be pretty fun when we come back.
Okay, I've got to ask, proofers. You didn't mention anything about proofers. Don't they have any plots? tell me where proofers fit into your scheme of writers.
Well, proofers are kind of people, I think, that sort of, they write, but then they stop because that critic is telling them, oh, this needs to be fixed, these needs to be fixed. And it can kind of hinder you're writing a little if you're always stuck trying to fix everything. So I do want to include them, but also encourage them, especially in the class, to just allow yourself to write crappy the first draft and just get it out on the page. And that's what matters. And you can always come back. Nothing is written in stone. Come on back and rewrite it whenever you feel like you've gotten everything down pretty well. So that, as well as proofing your own work, is essential, I think.
Did you originally come into Second Life to promote writing, or did you join Second Life and then go, oh, this is a good venue for writing?
Actually, it's kind of weird. I had a friend who was in Second Life, and she told me about it and how I can be really artistic and make things and all that stuff, since she knew I was an artist. And she had been telling me about it for months. I think I've been in 2 years now. Ooh, time flies. And I tried to get in, but I was having difficulties, you know, with my video card and all that. Anyway, once I finally got in, I saw this entire world and I was just in awe of it. You know, it's these people and they're dressed in different clothes and their different avatars and all this community and buildings. And I was just so amazed by all the creativity and builds that I would go on random tours and sims and just sort of look around and different parties and stuff like that. And eventually I found the huge sci-fi community and I fell into role playing, which was a complete blast. And I made some great friends there and I had so much fun. And I flew aircrafts and I moved up in the rank and, you know, it was Battlestar Galactica, just so you know. But it was so addicting. I completely admit it. I was addicted to it. And it really energized my writing and my stories. But it was after that I found the writing and reading community. And I didn't even know it existed here. But I got to know the people behind the sims, and I went to readings and basically started getting serious with my writing in Second Life. I still have role-playing in the back burner because, you know, I itch to get back in the air and fly things and stuff. But I've been so busy with my life, I haven't gotten back to it, but I can't wait. You guys may see me disappear for a while if I go back, though. You won't be able to find me.
Get off that deserted planet.
Exactly, yeah.
And what other ways have you leveraged Second Life as a writer? Do you use the community or, you know, the environments or anything like that as part of your backstory?
I haven't specifically yet, but I love diving into it and just sort of letting my mind go rather than having, you know, that left brain keep saying, okay, this isn't wrong, this isn't going to sell, this is just wrong. So I kind of let myself just immerse and just feel the setting and feel the people and the experience. So that kind of helps. As far as leveraging Second Life, I did a few readings of my work and I attended a few shows, kind of like this one, where I got to meet some writers and I talked on some writing related panels and held a bit of workshops, which is always rewarding because I love meeting new writers and aspiring writers because there's so much talent floating out there and so many great original voices. I previously showcased my work around different sims, which was kind of like having my own shop corner, which is really awesome. And of course, having the class helped and it grew into a discussion, and I got to learn a lot more about my own writing talking to my fellow writers there, and just the process just made it all the much richer, I think.
Interesting. You mentioned that after doing the role playing, your writing became much more vivid. Is it because you have the practice with dialogue, or how did the role playing actually influence your writing?
I think it's because it's sort of like acting in a way. So we'd have loose ideas of stories, and not really a script, but just a story plot idea to work with. And we'd have these characters that we get into, and I'd be able to be creative with my character, you know, where she comes from, who her parents were, and where she's going, what kind of world she's in. And I love that fact, you know, with sci-fi and fantasy, you get to work in these different worlds. So I think being creative that way, and also just acting things out on the fly and bouncing off whoever you're talking to or interacting with, really helps see that, hey, this is a story that we have going on here. And I get ideas from that, you know, either from that or just the world itself. So I did a bit of fan fiction, so that kind of helped as well. You know, whenever I'm stuck on my own stuff, I kind of just, okay, I'm going to play in this world for a little while. And that helps me keep up my writing skills, too.
You're saying it improved your improv. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, definitely. I think it did, at least. Yeah.
Still pumped, so.
I'm actually surprised that more writers aren't playing with the role-playing aspect of Second Life. But maybe they are, and they just aren't telling us.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, doing it on the fly.
That's what they have their alts for.
I think it comes down to time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
You're role-playing, you're not writing.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. When I used to role play, it was sort of like, oh, where's the time going, you know? But I get so into it, and just, you know, days would go by, and I'm like, okay, I need to write now. So that's so true.
Would you recommend other writers come into Second Life and take advantage of the community, or is it maybe a specific kind of writer that would find this a useful environment?
I think if they have time, they definitely love it. But yeah, it is kind of a central kind of niche group. And it takes a while to get acclimated in the world because there's so much to see and do and to get into the community. But I think the writing community is an awesome one. And there are many events people can attend and get themselves immersed in. And if a person has something to share and is willing to let others share with them, I think they will definitely enjoy the world and find it helpful to their writing. I think the big thing to keep in mind is patience, because it takes a while to build that network of friends and to get involved in the communities, but it's very rewarding when it gets going. But yeah, you have to kind of get ready for it and see what kind of world is here to work within, because it's very similar to real life but very different in others. So yeah.
Well, since you like to write the kinds of things I like to read, who are you reading right now? What books?
That's a good question, because I'm always having like four or five. There's a new publisher called Karina Press, which is an offshoot of Harlequin, their ebook division. I'm reading a few of those, and which I plan to review on my blog, so I have a few of those. And I'm reading Teresa DiMario's She-Wolf books again, because I'm a big fan of hers, totally big fan. Uh-huh. I'm also reading a nonfiction book on indie shops, basically, not just booksellers, just sort of the mom and pop shops and their history and how they came about and why they're thriving in the current downturn economy. And I have like 19 books on my mobile phone, so I cannot remember all of them at the moment, but there's a ton of books. I'm just sort of dancing in between.
You mentioned your blog, so why don't you tell people where they can find out more about your work and find your books?
Oh, yes. You can check out my works at my website, www.raelori.com. That should be Ray Laurie. I have some freebie shorts there, and it's a mixture of genres, you know, from illustrated sci-fi novella, dark mystery noir type of story, a romance, and I think a dark fantasy horror. So if you want to get a taste for my writing, you can check those. Also, writers are invited to check out my resource page for writing resources and book related stuff, that should be raylaurie.com/resources. And I also have a blog where I post news, publishing industry goings on, link alerts about free books, all that sort of goodies around the blogosphere, and basically anything that comes to mind, just random thoughts and things. So feel free to check that out at raylaurie.blogspot.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on Off the Shelf, Ray.
Yes, Ray. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a blast.
Bye, everyone.
Off the Shelf is produced for Radio Real by Kegia Girardi and Simeon Beresford. Technical production is by Radio Real. You can find Radio Real on the web at radioreal.org. Music on this program includes works by artists on the Magnatune label. The music in the general introduction is John Playford's All in a Garden Green by Eileen Hadidian and Natalie Cox from their album Dolce Musica, A Contemplative Journey. The off-the-shelf theme music is 1500 Tons by Burning Babylon from the album Stereo Mashup. And we bid you goodbye with this piece, Hagagasan 14 by Eternal Jazz Project, from their album Gratis Jazz. You can learn more about Magnatune and their artists on their website at magnatune.com. Off the Shelf is licensed under Creative Commons.